From the studios of NPR West, this is Day to Day. I'm Madeline Brand.
And I'm Alex Cohen. Just ahead, remembering the days when gas was just $1.19 a gallon.
It's a lot more today, more than $4 a gallon. Little surprise as oil was trading today above $135 a barrel. And you know, oil doesn't just go to make gas.
It goes into all sorts of things that we use every day. We've got one word for you, plastics.
Now, the dictionary tells us that a plastic is any substance which is capable of being molded. But to the chemist, for his modern plastics, it is actually more complicated.
As this little classroom film from 1944 explains, plastic doesn't grow on trees.
He takes organic substances, those containing carbon, such as petroleum.
When oil becomes pricier, so does your kid's sippy cups, the bottles your shampoo comes in, those buttons on your car radio, bits and bobs attached to your computer. You get the idea. If it's made of plastic, its price could be going up.
In a few minutes, we'll hear from a small business owner who makes many of those plastic doodads. But first, we go to one of the biggest users and consumers of petrochemicals in the world, the Dow Chemical Company.
Dow makes thousands of products sold worldwide, everything from highly specialized industrial chemicals to everyday product packaging.
And with us now is Dow CEO Andrew Liveris. Mr. Liveris, first of all, you use petrochemicals both as raw ingredients and as fuel in your factories. What's your oil bill been like recently?
Well, it's oil and gas, natural gas, and if you put the two together, we actually consume the equivalent of the entire production of the country of Qatar, which is just less than 1 million barrels of oil equivalent a day. Today, that's running at a rate of about $32 billion annually. In 2002, that number was $8 billion.
Now, you have had to pass on that increased cost to the consumers. Recently, you increased the prices of your products by some 20%.
Yes, we haven't recovered at all. I think what we've done in the more recent weeks with this recent surge as oil found its way from the 80s and 90s all the way up to 130-something, which is, of course, still present day, that surge came very quickly, and the year-on-year rise in energy costs for us was around 42%. We're basically saying we're going to have to look at shutting factories down. We can't run at these sorts of surging energy prices. Relocating them, shutting them down is what really we've been doing for the last 4 or 5 years. But this recent surge has put a lot of factories basically below what we call cash costs. So factories in the United States, factories in Europe that are frankly relying on just oil products. We can switch to natural gas. Unfortunately, United States natural gas has also surged in the last 5 years. We call that the hidden energy crisis.
Well, so if you shut down these factories, you'd move them to places where labor is cheaper?
No, not labor, energy. Interestingly enough, countries that do have an energy policy, countries like the Middle East, countries like China, countries like Russia, it's always fascinating when I give that list. So, you know, these are not necessarily democracies, but these are countries that have worked out that their natural resources need to be value-added in their country to create meaningful, high-paying jobs. That used to be the United States, but unfortunately, we've decided to restrict supply of our own natural resources in this country and, of course, to increase demand with inefficiency. So we're inefficient. We won't supply ourselves, so we're at the whim of a global market price.
So you're an advocate of what in terms of energy policy?
Well, we have been very vocal for many years now, 5 years, and have really increased our voice a lot. Really just three things. One is you have natural resources of the fossil fuel kind. We have the technology to produce it environmentally, increase supply. Open up ANWR, open up the outer continental shelf. We have between, let's pick your favorite numbers, between 15 and 30 years of supply for the United States in the country already, number one. Number two, advocates of efficiency across all the consumption. So that's transportation, fuel efficiency in car engines, which of course is now starting to happen, as well as appliances and buildings and a whole lot of other areas. And the third is renewables, of course. Now, that one gets a lot of press, so I won't labor on it, but the right sort of renewables, not the ones in the food chain, but that if we can take our discretionary money from the Department of Energy, mount a Manhattan-style project, we can solve things like cellulosic ethanol.
Well, as you well know, some of your proposals are quite controversial and
yes,
would take years probably to yield results. And as you noted at the outset of this interview, oil prices are rising very, very rapidly. So how would your solutions affect you in the near term?
Well, I'll start off with a credibility statement. We started saying this 5 years ago, and you can track our statements. And can I wish back the past, and can we all get get the policies in place today that we should have had 5 years ago? No, obviously we need to start today. I would tell you that the signal on increased production and really speeding up the alternatives in terms of nuclear and, of course, renewables, I think that would send a signal to the market and help stabilize this volatility we're all seeing.
So let's say none of your proposals is adopted and nothing gets done along these lines, at least until the next presidential election. What are you going to do between now and then? What's going to happen?
Well, you said it earlier. We're raising our prices and raising our prices and raising our prices, and then we'll cut our costs and cut our costs, and that means shutting down factories in high-cost locations, and we'll create value where we can. We'll invest, of course, in alternatives. We'll put the R&D budget to work. We'll do what we have to do to make our enterprise a sustainable enterprise. However, it just really needs to happen that a U.S.-based multinational like ours leads the way and says, here's the right sort of policies that help the United States of America be even better than it can be. But meantime, my global enterprise will keep investing overseas.
Andrew Liveris is the CEO of the Dow Chemical Company. Thank you very much.
I really appreciate it, Madeline.
The business of converting petroleum products into the kinds of things you use every day falls to thousands of mid and small-sized companies across North America, companies like the one owned by Tom Duffy. He is president and CEO of Plastic Components, Inc. in Germantown, Wisconsin, and he joins us now. Mr. Duffy, could you start off by telling us about some of the things that your company makes?
We make injection molded plastic parts that end up in almost everything that an American consumer would use. We make parts that end up in appliances, parts that end up in engines that go on lawnmowers and rider tractors and generators. We make plastic parts that go into power hand tools, and we make plastic parts that end up in automobiles and Ford pickup trucks.
So safe to say there's a whole lot that we couldn't do without companies like yours.
No, the plastics industry throughout North America is a multi-billion dollar industry, and there are somewhere around 5,000 molders throughout North America, and we're all making parts that get used by consumers every single day.
So how has the increase in oil prices affected your industry?
Alex, it's not much different from what's happened in the, you know, with the price of a gallon of gasoline. The increases are coming through in many cases on a monthly and even weekly basis, where the price of a pound of material that for many, many, many years didn't change by more than a penny or two a pound over the course of a year is now going up 5, 10, 15, or 20 cents a pound a month. And we expect that this process is going to continue for the foreseeable future.
And possibly get much worse.
Very likely get much worse. The analogy that I would use would be you're on a surfboard out in the ocean in front of a 25-foot wave. You have to stay ahead of that wave, because if the wave catches up to you and crashes on top of you, the world can become a very uncomfortable place very quickly. These prices have to be passed through to our customers, because if we don't, the business model is no longer sustainable.
If you look into your crystal ball, or perhaps for you it's a ball made of plastic, what do you see as the future for your industry?
There is a significant rate of attrition right now, Alex, in our industry. There's a lot of molders who either have not been able to pass on these price increases or will not be able to pass on these price increases. And in those cases, I think the rate of attrition is going to be severe and it's going to be dramatic. I've talked to a number of people in the industry who have a much broader perspective on the North American marketplace than I do, and it is their expectation that we could see an attrition rate of up to 30% of the molders in North America in the next 12 to 15 months, which will involve hundreds and hundreds of companies and thousands of employees in that industry. And a lot of these industries are heartland industries. These are Wisconsin, Illinois, Iowa, Indiana, Michigan manufacturing companies that I think are going to be in severe distress over the next year as these economic forces work at us from two different sides of the equation. One is the decreasing demand for our products just because of the economic slowdown, and the other being the dramatic increase in the price of raw material, which is clearly the biggest cost driver in our industry.
Tom Duffy is president and CEO of Plastic Components, Inc. in Germantown, Wisconsin. Thank you, Mr. Duffy.
Thank you, Alex.